This is on. Good morning. It's good to see all of you. Oh, I look at you and I remember the most significant, life-changing, life-altering times that I've had were Bible school weeks. Looking back from 44 years, those were the pivotal turning points. They didn't seem dramatic at the time, but in those times, I dealt with things that had gotten pushed off. The spiritual clarity was there for me to see my heart in ways that I hadn't before. And as I look back again, those were life-changing, life-altering weeks. So I'm glad that you're here. I'm glad that you invest in God, that you allow your soul to be open and guided. God bless you for it, truly. May he work with what you give him. I'd like you to imagine, if you could, you're kneeling next to a box that you're trying to open and fix something inside of. It's a sunny day, and you're frustrated. You've been at this for half an hour, and you've got some tools next to you, basic stuff, but it's not working, and you've got sticks and a sharp stone, and you're trying to twist the little lever sideways, and just this thing is not cooperating. And you need to get it done. You have no option but to do it. And after half an hour, it's just you're so done, but you have to. And then a friend walks up to you and gives you a little bag and says, here, try that. And as you open it, you find a screwdriver and a plier, a pry tool, clipper. And with this basic tool set, you can look at this thing. Oh, that is what this is for. Of course, it fits perfectly. Twist it and flip it. And the box is open. And then you look at the inside. And, well, yeah, I can deal with this now because I have this screwdriver with the Phillips end on it. And this one with the Roberts end on it. And before that, I couldn't do it. So as I give you this, I'm attempting to do that. I was thinking, what can I give to you in this hour that I've gleaned and compiled, if I can put it that way? What is the core? What will be your quickest shortcut to success, to clarity, to growth? What can I give you? What can I put into that bag? So I'm not going to necessarily give you one magic thing to do, but the concept is what absolutely has to be in all of our life to have a successful, thriving, clear, productive, fulfilled life. And the title for this is, this thing is poking me, the title for this is Resigning from the I-Team. So Resigning from the I-Team, and it will make more sense at the end. And we've all heard the phrases of die to yourself and things like that, and less of yourself, and serve others. It's all wrapped up in here, but I'm trying to package in a different way that it's a lot more understandable. That you can take it, and in your absolute daily life of whatever it is that you're processing, that you can take this, think back, and apply it, and go freely forward. So resigning from the I-Team. I asked the students at school a while back. We have assembly every Friday morning. So I asked the students, if you could be, I don't know how big your imagination is, but maybe try with me. If you could imagine that you're a horse, so I don't know what your brain does with that information, but imagine you're a horse, and you're wild and free, and you're running in a big, big, big open, let's say 600-acre ranch, and you're unrestrained except for the fences of the far sides, but it's basically free. And that's you, and you're free. You're in the Texas range, maybe. There's very, very, very little hindering you or telling you anything. You are free. And then, if that's you, imagine a different scenario. There's a farm scene. It's about 1910-ish when they needed horses. So there's another horse, same age, same stature, same color, but he's plowing in the sun with the farmer walking behind him over the furrows, up and down and up and down, and it's plod, 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 plod. And the harness is pulling the shoulders. It's good work. It's hard work. It's not suffering, but it's a good load. It actually feels good doing it. And then after that, you get unhooked, and the 10-year-old takes the harnesses off, combs you down. And there's many other things that come with that life of that horse. But I asked the question at school, and for those of you that were there, you maybe know where I'm going, I asked, which one would you be? Like, which is better? What would you pick as a default? What would you do? And if you ask that question to society at large, society will typically answer, wild and free, of course, be yourself. But, so if I can ask you, if you would pick, can I see a show of hands? I maybe already gave the answer, but what's your first thing that comes to mind? Like beyond the politics, beyond what you think is right, what would you rather be? Let's close our eyes and let's do this. Close your eyes and just vote with me. Whose first instinct was the wild horse? Okay, whose instinct, again, not thinking it through, whose instinct was the harness plowing one? Okay, there's about 10 of you voting, so I'm assuming the rest of you can't do the horse imagination. But okay, so we'll leave it there. But we'll do the test at the end again. So the wild and horse, I had this perfect student at school who answered immediately and clearly, the wild horse. And I said, sure, thanks, girl. I didn't say that, but I felt it. Let's do this. So the wild horse, you live and die your horse life. So every day you get to what? And she said, be free. Right, sure. So what are you doing? What are you doing out there? And I don't know, be free. So you're running around, right? Yeah, I'm running around. Okay. And then you live and die. And then once you come to your death, what did you do? What did you accomplish? What were you? What you were free, right? And you ran around, right? Yeah, I did. I ran around my whole life. Okay, well, that's a little bit lacking, right? So yes, you were free. Yes, you were unhindered. Yes, you had your own way. Every day you had your own way. But at the end of your life, you basically just ran around and in a pasture. So we could do that, I suppose. And the other one is, let's look at the other one, the harness plowing horse. He does plow. He actually is working for his own food as he walks up and down. He's going to plow grain. Or plow the field, plant grain. In fall, the granaries are full because of him, and he's going to have a full granary. He has food for the rest of his life because he's helping do it. He takes the family to church and back, and he has fellowship with the children. They're riding for fun. The father of the home is close to the horse. They have mutual agreements and understandings. They round up cows. It's a very full life. And yes, he's working. Yes, he's harnessed. Yes, he has no decisions of his own. But if you were to take that horse's life and at the end of it, talk to him, what did you do with your life? And he would go through a long list of fulfillment. Long list of fulfillment. And take the other one, and what did you do? I was free. So if you look at it really for what it is, it's not much of a deal to be free. Not much of a deal to be free at all. And I say that as a young man, that when I was very, very, very much a wild horse when I was younger, very much. I was extremely independent. I played hockey once a week. I did whatever I wanted for quite a long time. And it got more and more frustrating. It got more and more lonely. It got more and more unfulfilling because I was going the wrong road. And the further you walk from light, the darker it gets. It's just the nature of law. And the freer you are, the less fulfilled you'll be. I guarantee it, because it works like that. That's how life is. So the more that I got mired into my own thinking, I went to professional sports games, played hockey, bought an expensive car and credit because I wanted it. I did all the wrong things. Got credit cards that I shouldn't have gotten, toys, and went down and down and down. Eventually, I woke up, thank God. God clunked my head sharply a few times, said, son, wake up, this is nonsense. And God woke me up, thank God. But anyway, so I've tried the free one, and it is what it is. It is, like, at the surface, it looks all right, but if you look at the fine print, it's not free. It's not as easy as that, to be free and fulfilled. It doesn't work. It's not what life was meant to be. So, and the other thing I want to say as I get going here, some of the most serious, hurtful, painful regrets that I have are when I mind my own way. I left home when I was 20, 21-ish. I left home twice, the colony. The first time was selfish. I left because I wanted to see the world. I made a decision with myself that I would go for 5-6 months, and I would see the world. I would travel. I did. I drove truck to Texas and saw all sorts of unique things. And I went to the oil rigs, and I made a lot of money. And I brought a good bit of that money home and bought a lot of toys. And in that 5-6 month period, There's very little that I look back and saying, well, it was really neat to do that. I saw herds of camels in Texas and to see a lynx in the wilds of Alberta. It's something. But considering what I traded it for, I would not do that again. Like, my regret is deep. When I left home, I told my mom and dad as I walked out the door, my mom died 2 years ago, so this is really, it stings, but it should, because life is, you're supposed to get out of life with, if it stings, it's a healthy sting. It's supposed to be there. It's supposed to warn me not to do that. So my mom, I met them at the door, my mom and dad, and my mom was crying because she figured out I'm leaving. And we said our goodbyes with her crying, and she let me go. She's a very supportive, loving mom, or was. And my dad wouldn't shake my hand because he said to my mom, I'm not supporting this. I can't do this. He's going the wrong way. And my mom, with crying, said, Dad, shake his hand. He's leaving anyways. Like, don't make this miserable. Just, he's going anyway. Shake his hand and say goodbye to your son. And then I walked out, and we're all crying because I wanted what I wanted. I had this tunnel vision. And some of the deepest regrets that I have in my life today is my mom looking at me like that. She let me go, but it was at severe pain to her, and I know I hurt her badly. But I couldn't see beyond my what I wanted. So I'm just going to leave those two things to there, the wild horse, the plowing horse, and my deepest regret. I'll put that up as a pegboard and just move on. And to another story, there's a young man who enters the military. So when he enters in, he signs up. He gets told where to go at this and this base and this and this state or town or whatever, it's U.S., I guess. He gets a rank, which is at the bottom. He gets clothing issued. His civilian clothing is gone. He gets clothing. He gets a schedule. He gets a haircut. He gets sleep schedule, sleep hours. He gets food choices. And he has absolute obedience assigned to him. And that is along with person A and person B and person C and person D get the same treatment. And then person F, same treatment, person so on. Same haircut, same. Eventually, you've got a row of young, undistinguishable men, 1,000 deep, 10,000 deep, 100,000 deep. They're all the same. They have the list that I just read. Same rank, same schedule, same everything. So what's been taken away is the I factor, and we'll get to that in a minute. So as they enter in there, this guy's now in training, and he's kind of okay with this because he gets it. And after 3 months, he goes to his commander, and he says, hey, we've been doing great here. Can I get some action? And in that, the commander says, are you supposed to be cleaning the Humvee today? Is that your assignment for this morning? And the young trainee says, yes, sir, that is what I'm doing. And the commanding officer says, you were supposed to clean the 4 Humvees inside. You're cleaning 8 underneath as well. And as he's doing that for the next 2 days with his brush and his little scoop underneath him, taking off all the sand and mud with a little brush on his back, do you think he's going to go ask for action again? Or will he think about what he's going to do next time he goes to the commanding officer? So look at this situation. What's wrong? What did he do wrong? Why did he get slapped on the forehead like that? Can anybody guess? Okay, what's wrong is this. The question, when can I get some action? He is basically saying, if we boil it down, and I think this is fair, he is saying, I need something from the military. I want the military to serve me, and I want action with the military. So the military is serving his need. And I'll tell you something, the military does not care about his need. He got put in there to be consumable, expendable, used up, told where to go, told what to do, when they need him, how they need him. They do not care about his needs. His needs are not, they're not on the same planet. Like, that is not part of the equation at all. And if this young man comes in with the subconscious mindset that the military is going to serve him still, he's not begun training. And the officers know that. If they get into a situation and they need 50 men to take an extremely dangerous bridge at 2 in the morning, nobody's going to wonder, when is his birthday? Is this a good day for him? Does he have headaches at that time of day? Is he hungry? Is he scared? Is he the oldest child? This is too dangerous. Like, whatever factor you want to do, where the dress code doesn't fit him, It's not there. We need 50 young men to take a very dangerous bridge at 2 a.m., period. Nobody cares about anything about you, what your name is, nothing. I need 50 men to go do that. The military is not serving you. You are serving the military. So when he said, can I get some action, there was still a subconscious mindset that he was, you're missing it, son. This is not how we do things here. And then, as he's, again, it's a long job, he's underneath cleaning the vehicles, and he's thinking, what on earth? But I guarantee you, next time he wants to do that, he'll think, okay, I did something wrong. Eventually, he'll clue in. I'm part of this deal. I'm a unit. I'm not an individual anymore. When it comes to me, this is me, not this. This around me is me. The military, the machine, the unit is the key here. And in Christianity, moving on here, as long as this guy still puts authority or thought in what he wants, it will probably be an issue when it comes to deployment time. Like I said before with the mission, if he's involved in it, it's going to be probably detrimental to the team. If he's just part of everything, he does his part like he's been trained to do, it'll probably work out. So is the allegiance to the mission or to himself? And that's a subconscious, deep mindset. So in order to succeed, the men have to trust the commander. Number one, you do as you're told, you assume it's the right decision. We need the bridge, then we need the bridge, then we need the bridge. It's not up for debate. They do their best as unified as possible. And the more individuals there are in that group, the less likely of success it'll be. The more of a unit they are, the better their chances are. And even of surviving. His best chance of surviving is not worrying about himself, but working with the unit. And that underlying core has to be there. So military objectives that are best met when orders are followed and not debated amongst everyone. So I'm making a longer point on this one, but it has to be settled. The unit moves and is successful. The individual can't decide stuff. You're part of the unit, and that's your deep mindset. So step number one, the individual forgets himself and focuses on the team mission. So we'll change gears a little bit here. Think of volleyball. You're watching, we're all familiar with our level of volleyball. It's average, medium. So imagine you're standing next to a court, and there's about 8 or 10 or 12 people in there, and the ball flops over a net that's hanging low. They have no strings, really. It's just very loose, and people are taking the ball and whacking it just back and forth with slapping. It goes over once, it drops. Somebody else pops it over the net, then somebody gives a one-handed whack, and it flies over, and it falls again. And there's really, like, as far as what could be, they're doing about 1%. Nobody's passing. Nobody's working together. Everybody's just out. Ah, the ball's coming. And you whack it back over. So that kind of volleyball, for somebody that knows a bit more, is painful to watch. For the reason of, you know what could be. You know what teamwork looks like. When six people are synchronized, unified, they're in the certain parameters, they're in the lines, the net is tight, they all know what they're doing. There's no one-man show. Everybody's together. The team is here to do what it needs to. So that's the other side. And then on the other hand, I was part of a group a while back who had a strong player, and he would run and take the balls from everyone else, especially the younger ones learning. And it got so bad that the young person, once in a while when it was her ball, she wouldn't take it because she expected this dominating guy to come in and take it for her. And then she'd just kind of stand, and then it would almost hit her, and the guy next to her who'd been dominating her was like, take the ball! And I tried to tell him, you're killing the whole team. She's completely capable. Let her be. You're almost standing on her head. And then when it's her ball and you decide to graciously let her take it, she doesn't know what to do because he's going to come and boot me out again. So by his dominating strong, he wanted to win. But by doing that, he killed the teamwork totally. It was sad to see that one guy who is probably twice as good as the rest of them, he killed the game over and over and over. And eventually I said, do that one more time and you're out. We are perfectly capable of doing our thing here. As a team, we do well. But with you doing that, get out. You're a total detriment, being twice as good. And he's starting to get it, but it's a tough one for him. But the team is the point here. One star in the team can wreck what the team is supposed to do and lose the game in the process, doing the opposite. So I'd like to do something else here. Matthew 25, I read this a while back at church here, so our home group will know where I'm going. But Matthew 25, turn there. I'd like you to, this is a test. So as you look at this parable, and it struck me with our winter program at school, we had this parable, and my attitude, this message is partly born out of that. So it's a parable of the talents. It says the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. And we know the parable, and I think for sake of time, I might not read all of it. But unto one he gave five talents. He's passing them out. The servants come. He's passing them out. Five, two, one. And he gave them to his team. He passed out either responsibility or actual currency, we don't know. It says talents, but it could apply many different ways. So he gave them responsibility, I'll say it that way. And he that had received five talents traded the same. He worked with them, he invested, he got them back. Let's say somebody gives you 10,000, go use it. I would give you 10,000 of my money. And I say, young man, here, I'm back in 2 years. Here's 10,000. What are you going to do with it? So the point is, you might go, if your niche is cars, you might go buy a car for $10,000, do some work on it, sell it for $12,000. You take the $12,000, buy an $8,000 car, sell it for $9,000. Now we're $3,000 ahead. So instead of $10,000, we technically have $13,000. And you keep working it, then wisely investing it, and you lose $5,000 in the next deal. But you do it again, and eventually, when I come back after a year or two, I'll ask you, what did you do with the 10,000? And he will say, I made 10 more. Here is your 10. It's not the 10 I gave him, but we have 10 that I'm going to account for, and 10 more that I bought and sold. I had to sell 20 cars to get this thing, and I lost a pile of money doing it, but I actually made 10 back. Here you go. And then I, as a owner of the 10,000, will say, well done. And another one, two, and so on it goes. But he that had received one went and digged in the earth and hid his Lord's money. And after a long time, the Lord of those servants cometh and reckoned with them. And then they give account here in verse 20 and 21. His Lord said unto him in verse 21, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of thy reward. And the two talents as well. And then the guy who did one, who had one, he got less, but it doesn't matter. He said, I knew that thou wast a hard man, reaping thou wast not sowing, and gathered where thou wast not strawed. He's saying, I know you're shrewd. I know you, the hard man comes across here, I think, differently than what probably the original wanted. It's shrewd. You'll do things in a certain way to make your end come out. You'll get the long end of the stick when possible. And I was afraid and went and hid thy talent in the earth, and lo, there it is that is thine. I am given back the exact same one that you gave me. Here it is, I kept it for you. And his Lord answered and said, thou wicked and slothful servant, thou knowest that I reap where I sow not, and gather where I have not strawed. In other words, I want increase. You could have put the money to a bank and gotten interest, basically. And then he says, take therefore the talent and give it to him which has 10. And the point isn't here that the guy who has 10 has 10. He was completely faithful with what he got. That's why he's getting the other one, because he'll put it to good use as well. He made good use of 10, he'll make good use of one. And then it says, your everyone that hath shall be given, and he shall have abundance, but from him that hath not shall be taken away even that which he hath. And cast ye the unprofitable servant into outer darkness, and there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So when you read that, I was almost shocked at my own opinion, or at my own viewpoint when I looked at this a number of months ago. So when you read that, what comes to your heart psychologically? Do you think that's rough? Like when you read that, what do you think? I wish there was almost a Bible study that we could dialogue more, because I'm kind of stuck doing it. But what comes to your heart? With my initial reaction was, ooh, that is severe. What on earth? And it was almost an unjust ring to it. But then, and rereading it, you start at the beginning, and you're saying, it reads here, and again, think now, take what we're reading and put it back to the layers that I've been building on and read it another way with the other viewpoint that I've been talking about. For the kingdom of heaven, So this is not about the guy with the one talent here. This isn't what the story is about. He's a minor player. It says the kingdom of heaven, there's a big picture, let's say military, if we can put it into our other terms. For the kingdom of heaven is a man traveling into a far country. He's an owner of much, who called his own servants. They are working for him. They report to him. They get their sustenance from him. They get their house from him. He's their servant or their master. And he's calling his servants and delivered unto them his goods. It's not their goods. It is a master delivering his goods to servants that are working for him. That's the context. So when we feel sorry for this guy getting cast out, he did utterly fail in his duty, right? And that's the correct perspective. Jesus is saying the kingdom of heaven is like this. When a responsible landowner speaks to his servants and they completely dismiss and don't take that into context and worry about their own viewpoint and completely miss what is supposed to happen, that is a bad situation. It is not supposed to be like that. So what I'm trying to drive at here, the place for I in you, yours, and my life, the place for I is typically very harmful, very detrimental. So people that look out for themselves typically will lose out what they're looking for, life principle. And Jesus said in a different words. So if you're looking at yourself, you will probably miss what you're supposed to be getting. Very sobering, but an absolute life principle. So, I'll go a different way again here. The Bible sounds strange when viewed through the lens of the individual. I don't know if you've ever noticed that, but if you look at the parables, if you look at the actual words of Jesus, the Bible viewed through the individual, me, I, what am I getting out of it? If you would view a soldier through the lens of an individual, it becomes really weird as far as what they're asking him. Why was the commander so hard on him? Doesn't he understand the guy's feelings? Why should he be under Humvee for 2 days cleaning the underside of a Humvee? Like, if you look at it from the other point of view, the whole military deal is weird. Getting a guy out of bed at 2 a.m. to be shot, that's just not good. But look at it from the other point of view. It's the military. Their mandate is to protect the country, do what they need to do to make what they deem is an appropriate and right mission. So on one hand, the Bible sounds very strange when viewed through the lens of the individual. If you honestly look at how it's read, what it's saying, the rights, opinions, and self-will of men aren't there. But when we try to put them there and make it, wrangle it, it becomes really awkward really quickly. Let's go to John 12. The Bible makes very coherent, very plain sense if you look at it from the picture of God's viewpoint, and we are his to be used and in a way consumed. I'll get to that later as well. John 12. Excuse me. John 12, 23, I think it was. And again, these are verses that we're familiar with. I hope I'm at the right place here. All right, John 12, 23 and 24. Jesus answered them, saying, "The hour has come that the Son of Man should be glorified. Verily, verily, I say unto you, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. But if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit." So when you read that at base English, most of us will look at it and say, we need to die to ourselves. We need to die more. We need to be more unselfish. Sure. But that's kind of skimming. It's not really getting at what he's saying here. So if this is your life, the key phrase here, except the corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, there's some very clear things, but one of them is it abideth alone. Thank you. So the corn of wheat abides alone. You can keep your life and abide alone if you want. Like I said before about the selfishness of things, if that's your priority, you can have it. But like I tell my children, you choose what you choose, but then you get what you get. So you choose what you choose, but then you get what you get. So, except the corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. And then thinking of the free horse running, it did choose to be, if I can say it that way, it was alone and isolated and free, but it had basically nothing at the end of its life. And a young man that will go after his own needs will basically have, I'll say it again, from experience and from looking at life, it will have basically nothing. Until maybe at 35 or 40 or 26 or whatever it is, when they get plain too old to be young anymore, usually young men grow up at that point a little bit. They start getting sense and saying, okay, give my head a shake. I need to make some sense of things here. But that's late in the game. That applies to young ladies as well. But somebody that can, young at 15, plug into the bigger picture is on the path to success. But the first thing that has to go is you. You are your own worst enemy. You just are. So unless the individual mindset is put away, the fruit or the result cannot be gained. Unless the individual mindset is put away, the fruit or the result cannot be gained, lest a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die. And yes, that's not a good prospect, to die. Obviously, right? Who chooses that? It abideth alone. That's the other option. If we choose not to die, we abide alone, because a corn of wheat is not meant to be singular. It's meant to go down and bring up 100-fold more. It's meant to be planted. So when God put us on this earth, we're not meant to isolate and protect and look after our own interests. We're meant to give and love, which is giving, and serve, because that's where fulfillment is. Those are all giving, self-sacrificing things. But somebody that has learned this isn't suffering. A life of service is not suffering. There's life in there. But you don't get it till you do it. So when the speak of the farmer who's putting his hard-earned seed into the ground and burying it, he's not crying over a seed that he lost. He's looking forward to an abundant harvest and much, 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 much more seed. He's not going to be bemoaning all the seed. So on one hand, from one side, it can look like a waste, but it is an investment, and you have to view it like that. So I'd like to just leave that aspect of things and change things a bit here. So I'm not sure if I should or not. How many of you are familiar with my, when I drew the three rings on the board? I've shared that a number of times. Not too many. Okay, I'll quickly do it again. So in horse training, let me do that. So we've got a small ring, a bigger ring, and a 5/8 mile track. This will say 25 feet. And this is 3 feet. So in horse training, we have three rings, and maybe find yourself here. The first one is the 25-foot one. A rancher is in the middle with a rope, and there's 25 feet where the horse will walk in circles. And when the farmer gives a signal, maybe with a snap of a whip, the horse will stop, and he'll snap again, and the horse can go the other way. Really, really exciting. Then he'll snap again, and the horse will stop, and he'll go in another way until he stops fighting the rope. And once that's established, the rancher is not going to kill you. Just relax. I know you're big and free and wild and strong, and you'd rather be out running. But for today, you'll be on the rope, or else it just is this way, and you'll walk in circles. And the horse just got brought in from the pasture, and he's just not liking it. Then jerking and fighting, and every chance he gets, he's doing something else. But after about a week, he figures out, I don't die here. Whatever, I do this for an hour, and I go get food, and I run away again. It's okay. And he submits to the 25-foot ring, and he's learning to walk in circles. And he's learning to simply do it, get it over with, and move on. All right, we got it. So we do that with a saddle on, and we do the same thing. And he bucks for maybe 20 minutes, but he figures out, again, this isn't killing me. What's the difference? Put the saddle on, walk me, let me out. No problem. So at a certain point, he figures out, ah, this is fine. And then he takes him out. Then we start riding, and he bucks for a while. And after all, we get the idea that what he wants me to do with the training and the reins and the stop and the go and the turning. And we get that figured out, and the horse is then able to process and run. But after a while, he gets, you know what, I still want to be free. I don't like being told what to do. I hate cows. And he just, this is not nice. And he gets grumpy, and this guy in my back is always just telling me what to do all day. And he gets his will back, especially when he sees George running on the hill there. And then the farmer will then, or the rancher will then take a rein and snug it really tight and put his nose right back to his flank. So he has to do this. And when my brother used to do that, the horses hated it. It was like a shaming and a punishment and a just everything in one thing. And the horse very quickly said, I give up. And then he'd settle down and then he'd do what he's told again. But once in a while, they just needed the tight rein. Okay, you can be a jerk if you want, but I'm the rancher, I'm in charge, I know what we need to do, we got cows to move, you can't decide to prance and run and do your own thing here, I need you to work for me. So you go into the 3-foot loop for a while, however many turns you want, there's no rush, you can go all day in a 3-foot circle or we can do one turn, it's up to you, but as soon as you settle back down, we'll go work again, and it'll be good. And at the end of the day, eventually, the horse figures out that, okay, it actually was really good, it's fulfilling to do a day of work, we get these cows moving, I don't like them anyways, so it's fun to herd them into this corral and lock them up and have them out of the way, and this is good, I'm dominating with the rancher, but the horse figures out, this is good, that like wild and free has its perks, but this is great, and I get more feed than he does anyways, and I got the children on my back, and we get an apple in the evening from the mom, and he figures out, I like this life, this bondage life, this is actually good, shocking. Now, if you would have told him here when he first got that rope on his halter and he was jerking the farmer for an hour at a time, if you would have told him that he would enjoy being harnessed, that's crazy. I want to be wild and I want to be free. But once he is harnessed and he figures out what's going on, it's like, I can do that. And eventually, because he's bred, excuse me, I'm not sure what my voice is doing today. Eventually, because he's bred to run, he's got 6 generations of thoroughbreds behind him. He was actually specifically born to run, to be the fastest horse on the continent. He's fulfilling that when he calms down, when he figures out what to do, when he doesn't fight anymore. Then they get him in here, and he might win a few $1 million in bets because he's one unit with this jockey who's been riding for many years. And as you see them flying around that 5/8 track, and he's gaining nose for nose for nose, just an absolute machine, if I can put it that way, completely one with the jockey on his back. They're both moving in complete sync, going for the same thing, no fight, just beautiful muscle, tearing down the track and winning. That's what is the aim, but it starts here. And until he's, when that wild and free thing is there, you will never get to the track and winning what you were made to be. And God's laws are like that. Looking at it from the fighting side, it does look not nice to be jerked around and the farmer telling you what to do all the time. If you look at it from that point of view, yeah. But look at it from the other point of view. You were made to do this. And the bondage that you're under, quote unquote, is for you. This is what you were made for. Your best giftings. We're not going to have you, what can I say? There's certain things, the horse will be given the horse's responsibility. He's not going to have some other weird thing that doesn't fit him. God has you in a certain way, give you gifts. He will fit you what he wants to do with you and for you. And it will fit and it'll be comfortable and natural and fulfilling. But that's where the win is. Once you figure out that whoever is trying to govern you is in there for you. And this is what you were made for. The will is given to another or joined. The fight is done. There's harmony. The horse gives up his individuality, but he gets to be part of a beautiful team with the jockey. So there's trust and submission. So this is, in the human heart, this is very, very, very hard to get. There are very few people that understand this, but it is beautiful when it's accomplished, especially in young people. So to have a young heart that is 12, 13, 14, 15, 18, that is in harmony with their authority is absolutely beautiful. There is no conflict. And I know there's some of you living there, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You are not fighting with your parents. You're in harmony with your parents. You want what they want. They want what you want. There's no fighting. There's no tension. There's no bucking. But with that comes the understanding that there's no equal. Somebody has to be in charge, and that somebody is not you. And that for the human heart to process is not, that's hard. It truly is. And if you're not there, it might look like somebody's just trying to fight you. That's not the point. The point is to have complete harmony. But having said that, in theory, how does it translate? When am I done? What's my time? 12, okay. So how does this translate? Like, it's one thing to have the theory, but over here, how does it look? With your, what authority would we have? Family, church, I guess are the easy ones. So how does this look in real life? We're just going to roll another page here. So again, for those of you walking in clear harmony, that you've understood this principle and gotten it, you know that the wild and free is highly overrated, and that the blessing that you're getting out of your current relationships, the fullness of that, it's worth it by 10,000 times over, like easily, not even a question, not a question. But looking at it from the other point of view, needing to submit and needing that heart broken, I don't like the term a broken will, because I don't think God does broken things as far as wrecked, but it's yielded and submitted to a way that there's no fight. So the horse's will isn't broken, it's given, it's harmonious. There's a difference there. The broken, like, you can dominate and bully a horse, that they're afraid of you and they'll do anything you ask, but they're scared, they're tense. And it's very different than being in complete harmony, trusting each other. So a broken and a submitted will, I think, are different. And God wants a willing to submitted heart. And I'll get to the person and the life of Christ, which is my ultimate goal, and look at him. And that'll give a very clear picture. I love that. That's where I'm going, by the way. So the authorities in your life, family and church, are probably big ones. Where can I go here? So looking at parents, let's do it this way. So Jesus and his father, Jesus was a son, and Jesus had a father, right? Pretty basic. So how much conflict did they have? Anyone? How much conflict did Jesus and his father have on a daily basis? None. Yeah. None. Zero. Nothing. Jesus kept saying what? Over and over and over when he talked about his father. Help me out. Mm-hmm. Yep, what else? What else? So, I and my father are one. I do the will of him that sent me. What else? Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Let's have a few more. There's many. Mm-hmm. So in those phrases, and there's many, like, I'm confident that no matter what you would pick out from the entire Gospels, every phrase that Jesus said about his father, if you would mine it for eternity, you would find no conflict of will there. None. It is not there. And that is the heart of what God wants for his children, to him. But the training ground, quite frankly speaking, is you and your parents. Because unless you get the earthly part down, the chances of you getting your heavenly part down is very, very low, quite frankly. So your school is your parents. And I'm not saying this because I am a parent. If my dad were here, I'd be in your shoes and he'd be here. So I try to honor my dad. When he walks into a room, I'll make sure that no matter what I'm doing, does he have a place to sit? He has a hard time walking. When we have supper, I'll ask him many times over, Dad, can I get you anything else? Can I do anything for you? So I'm not being hard on you because I'm a dad. I'm saying in the level of life, it's how God made the thing to be. And for you to understand this concept of submission, harmony, working with your authorities, quite frankly, I am a parent, and you are generally between 25 and 15. Your training ground is your parents. And as you come to that place, that is your school. And what you do with that relationship will directly translate to what you do with God. If you can get this one, you have that one. If you don't get this one, if you're fighting here, I can't say absolutely, but almost, you'll be fighting here. Not fighting, but not submitted, and probably jerking the chain, and just, I don't think there's harmony. I don't think there can be, because of how God set things up. So if you look at Christ, when people say it's all about Jesus, oh, I agree so much with that. But you have to actually look at how the man was. What did he do? How was he? So look at parent relationship, for example. What did he do with his father? And then what is your goal? Like, I understand there's no free lunch. I mean, we're in a broken world. I get that. There's lots of conflict in the temporal world. So some situations don't work for this. I get that. I'm not trying to force something that can't be, but I'm talking in a general way where your heart is at, what you deem as normal, what you want. That is the key here. Whether it can work in your home or not, I don't know. Maybe you're like, I left my parents when I was 21, the second time to go to Bible school so I can get help for my soul. And that parting was better because it was for slightly nobler, more noble reasons. But in a normal home, what is your heart to the home? Is it you narrowed in, or is it bigger picture? How can I contribute here? Am I a conflict? So looking at Christ, what did he say over and over? If you look at all of what he said about his father, you would find this. I do nothing but what my father asks me. That is a big statement. I and my father are one. Many of the things that were said here, there was no conflict there. So I'd like to quick go to Genesis 22. I'll hopefully be done in time here. Genesis 22. God put this story in for a reason. We're all familiar with it, but look at it from a slightly different viewpoint. There are two fathers here and two sons in Genesis 22, Abraham on the mountain. So there are two sons and two fathers, and they both passed beautifully. So Genesis 22, when they went up, where shall I come in here? I don't think I'll read it for sake of time. But basically, you have the two fathers, which is God and Abraham, and the two sons, which is Abraham and Isaac. Both of their responses in all these cases are a shining example of, I'll say this, what God is very, very pleased with. So this story was taken out of history. The history of the world is long. And God chose certain things to lift out and put into an eternal book and saying, look at that, stamp of approval. Here's what I love. Let me show you something. So God took this story and just put it on display, like a museum, if I can put it that way. Look at that. So this story where Abraham submitted without conflict, without fighting back, without declaring him equal, without shooting back opinions, without weighing his own feelings about it, it's not there. And Isaac in the same way. It wasn't, what I'm trying to get at here is there can't be an equal when you get given a command by a parent, for example. And again, this is slightly not awkward because I'm a parent, but the principle is still here. I'm going by what I'm seeing in the Bible. And again, you'll all have your turn when you'll be parents. But that parameter has to be there, the human heart bowed. So what I'm coming at is if a parent gives you a command, is it okay in your heart to push back? That's your opinion, I have mine. Are you looking eye to eye at this thing? Truly, your parent would say, for example, let me be really earthy here. I don't like your shoes. So at that point, we can easily say, what's wrong with the shoes? But what did you just do? Okay, this can be extremely idealistic and pie in the sky, but I'd love to give you something beautiful, high and noble to go for. So that when you realize that you can say, this is what God meant for life to be. That's the target. So when the parent would say, I don't like the shoes, can we not have them? So one attitude is, that's your opinion, I have mine, what's wrong with the shoes? I bought them, they're a lot of money. But let's look at it differently. What if God had said to Jesus, I don't like your shoes? Look at how he was. So if it's all about Christ, what would Christ do? Right? They don't look eye to eye and debate opinions. Jesus would have said, where can I throw them? How far can I throw them? Can we hide them? Can we burn them? Like, that would have been the heart. It wouldn't have been pushback. And the point is harmony. And again, when it comes to opinion or whether the room is too hot or too cold, that's slightly different. I'm talking about the heart attitude of, is it okay to argue back to parents, for example? Or is it very far removed that you don't say to your commander, can I get some action? There are two very different attitudes. And it, unfortunately, in our world, the Bible attitude of children to parents and then from Christians to God becomes very weird. The attitude of Christians to God is what he said in the parable of the kingdom of God, right? It's not about you and your talent. It's about the owner getting what he told you to do with the talent. That's the point. It's the landowner, not the servant who didn't use it. So what I'm trying to do here is mine down to the heart attitude for you to look at, is it good or bad that my will be given away? So again, if there's a young man that's wild and free, and you as a young man, you're under your dad, in other words, he's not letting you do certain things, or he's guiding you in a way that you just might not be comfortable with, and you look at this wild and free young guy over there, are you jealous, or do you see it as for what it is? Can you take God's way and saying, this is what the Bible actually clearly shows me. I want what God wants. I want the very best that can be for my life. And therefore, I have to do it God's way. And in that, once you step into it, once you come in that, you do find the blessing. And you can say, this is good. So God's ways translate very easily from the Bible to real life. But it's hard to do. So I'm saying it's not just theory is my point. But when you actually come to it and do it, you find out this is hard. Have you ever watched hard as in not suffering, but it's not as easy as it looks. Have you ever watched an expert do something and then you go and try it and you can't even begin to do it? And you're like, oh man, I had no clue what was this stuff. Like all of a sudden the respect for what just happened goes way up because it looked so easy. And when we look at Christ's example, he was so utterly successful at doing this and so clear with it that it looks easy and you just take it for granted that yeah, he was God. But you try it. And then your respect for his submission, Philippians 2, I'd like to go there later. Or Isaac. Like imagine, I mean, we've done this probably many times in different messages, but imagine if you were Isaac and your dad said, we're going to the mountain and I'm gonna put you on the altar and we'll tie you up and lay you on there. I mean, that's pretty obvious what's gonna happen here, right? And Isaac had no fight. He didn't fight. Now, if you take that to your daily interactions, wash the dishes. And again, it could be that you would think that your parents are trying to dominate you. So I hope you don't get that attitude. A parent who is a godly parent has even more responsibility than you do. All you do have to do is obey, technically. But think of it this way. All the soldier has to do is obey to get up at 2 in the morning, go through the woods, cut the cables, and retreat. That's kind of all he has to do. The commander has to take the responsibility for those 50 lives. If it's a total wrong call, if they all got killed because it was a stupid decision, it's on him. He has to deal with the parents, the responsibility. It's on his shoulders of what's going to happen here. So his command, if he does it right, he is bearing the responsibility of that. So a parent that is selfishly just commanding you willy-nilly, it's not how it's supposed to be either. But I'm not talking to parents. If I was talking to parents, I'd say different things. But for you young people, a heart that is in harmony with your parents is what you're after. That's the long and short of it. I'll tell you a quick story about a cattle guard. We were visiting a ranch one day, and this very experienced girl took a horse for a walk. You know what a cattle guard is? You're familiar with cattle guards? So we have fence, and then there's a gate, posts with more fence. And what they do is they put bars across that have a few inches between them. So the pickup trucks, can drive through and just go over the bars, book a book a book, kind of like railroad tracks. But if an animal or a cow tries to go on it, they fall through these gaps, their hooves fall in. So animals will not go on cattle guards because they get all 4 feet down there and they're pretty much dead. So it's a completely effective way, and usually they're long enough, like 10 feet, that the animals can't jump over them. So Texas gates, I think that's what they're called. Cattle guards, I don't know. But anyways, there was this girl there, and she was distracted, and she took this horse out, and she was going to leave the yard, which happened to have a cattle guard. And she was experienced. She'd been riding for at least 20 years. She was probably 30 years old at the time. But she was distracted, and she went up to the gate, and the horse shied off. And she wasn't cluing in, like, come on, we're going out to the mountains, literally. And she pushed him again, and he shied off again. But then she got serious with him, like, move it, we're moving out, we're going to go to the mountains. And he stepped onto the cattle guard and went down all 4 feet. So if you think of a 2,000-pound horse, all 4 feet are in the cattle guard and is now stuck in there. And usually it's over, like you can't get them out. Because when they step, they come up. His leg is here, he pulls up to get footing, he steps on this round bar and falls in here, and just keep doing that, then basically rip himself up, and you have to shoot them and get him out with a crane or something. But the horse literally allowed her to lead him onto the cattle guard. And again, it went down, and the owner of the ranch panicked. Very sober man, but at first, that's the only time I've ever seen him worked up on anything. But he panicked and ran over. And somehow, it was close enough to the side that it got one leg out, and it was able to hoist itself up and put the other one out on the other side, and then kind of just scrabbled with its back ones, where because they're a hawk, it was able to kind of hobble sideways and got three out and then four, and it actually got out. Scratched and ripped, but it got out and it lived and it was okay. But the horse literally allowed itself to be put onto a cattle guard. It said, I don't want to do this. Are you sure? And she said, go, let's go, we're moving out. And he said, this is not a good idea. And the lady went, come on, move out. And he said, okay. And he went in. Can you imagine? Is this a good horse or a bad horse? Who's got the fault here? So what I'm saying is, your parents are typically not going to just jerk you around for their own fun. They take their responsibility serious, because if they have your life like that, I trust that they'll love you with it and guide you in a way that's good and right. So I'm going to be closing in a few minutes. I'll leave some stuff out. I packed a little bit too much in. But the point is, the heart attitude. Is it your life? Are you eye to eye, command to command with your authorities? Or do you have the right to push back? Are you equal with your authority? Can you be submitted to directions? Can you be told what to do? And again, my point isn't to work at parents here. I'm just saying that's the school. Because when it comes to God, if you're trying to hold on to your own life and have God direct it on the other hand, it doesn't work like that. Like, it just doesn't. You have to have a heart that can say, yes, Lord, yes, and like it and love it and live there. And once you're there, it's beautiful. So just in closing here, can you be told what to do? No strings, no pushback, no opinions. So buildings have shipping departments, cleaning departments, warehousing, complaint departments. And in some cases where things are going super well, they might close the complaint department because there are none. Their product is just great. I would invite all of us to close the opinion department. Can I say that? Just close the opinion department. Try it. It's hard. And your respect for Jesus and for Isaac and Abraham will go way up. So if somebody tells you something and you're ready with an opinion immediately, that's our natural response. I'm sure all of us do it, including me. But I would challenge all of us to close the opinion department. Nobody asked you how you feel about doing dishes. They didn't. We just need the dishes done as a family. So the ball is going to the far corner. We're not going to discuss who goes and runs into the bleachers and tries to get the thing back in volleyball. Whoever's closest, ablest, best fits it is gone. Nobody asked how they feel about it. Just, it's part of the team. The team needs it done. Whoops, the ball is coming. And you run and you do what you can. You fly into the chairs, you save it. And it's a sacrifice. But the team just needs it. Had it been him, it would have been him. So be it, right? Stuff just fits if you look at it from a team aspect. So again, this phrase here, I'd like to say it again. I like it. It is very simple, but very clear. Look at Jesus, and humility isn't thinking less of yourself. You've all heard this, but it's so true. Humility isn't thinking less of yourself. It is thinking of yourself less. Just don't worry how you feel about stuff. Try just simply doing it, no strings. And again, it's harder than it looks, I guarantee you. But once you get used to the process, it's actually remarkably freeing. So if you feel a rein on your right neck and the rancher wants you to turn to the right, don't ask how you feel about it. Just turn to the right and see what happens. You might be seeing stuff happen in your life that you never dreamed would happen. If I can put it that way, you'll be cutting off cows you never dreamed could be cut off. Because you stopped fighting and somebody's been trying to guide you. And all of a sudden, when you cooperate, stuff unlocks and off it goes. It's amazing because it's how God meant it to be. So the guided life, and that's what it is. It's essentially a guided life. The guided life has untold blessings, guardrails to hurtful cliffs, shortcuts to goals. I read a post the other day. A man without a map No, a man without a guide, if you've heard it, maybe help me out. A man without a guide makes a two-day journey into 20 years or something like that. Can you quote it loudly?
No.
Try. So a man without a guide makes a two-day journey into 20 years. A thousand days to make a two-day journey is the point. And then another one that I really love, John Dee says this one, I think. He who is under the rule of the compass has the freedom of the seas. I love that. He who is under the rule of the compass, in other words, you're being told what to do. You can't just sail wherever you want. If you want to go to India, you'll have to be very specific about what you're doing. But you have the rule of the seas. Take the compass away and take a captain who is free to do his own thing and let him go into the ocean. That's basically how most people live their life. When the wind blows here, we do it. If we feel like doing that, we do it. If it looks like a good idea to do that, we do it. And there's no governing. There's no guidance. So he who is under the rule of the compass has the freedom of the seas. That is kind of the whole nutshell. So as opposed to, if I can go back to the earlier one, running around all day. And at the end of your life, you were a free horse, but you lived and died running around in a pasture. Whoopee. So going into the kingdom of heaven is like, read those parables in a different eye or with different eyes. God's world is a big world. You're part of it. God needs you. You're very specifically made with gifts that God needs. And I'm not just saying it. God made you, you. He needs you. So if you are a screwdriver, there's things that you can do that the level cannot do. If you're a hammer, there's things that the pry bar cannot do. There's things that the plier can do that the hammer cannot touch. So God needs you. I'm not saying you have to obliterate yourself or your gifts. Develop your gifts. God says wait on the gifts in Corinthians. Wait means like a table waiter. You know, a waiter comes and gives you food, he serves you. Corinthians says wait on the gifts, meaning serve the gift. So if you have a teaching gift, develop teaching. If you've got a servant gift, develop serving. If you've got a giving gift, develop giving. Learn how to give $20 to the right need where it's like, that fit. Good job. You saw it, you gave, you helped. So there's gifts to be waited on. You are very individual. God made you that way on purpose. There's no mistakes here. But with that, if you try to mine out your life, you will lose it. Jesus promised you that. But if you lose it, you'll have life abundant, guaranteed. That's how God works. So honor parents, serving, self-sacrifice, love versus selfishness, a life given to help others. The kingdom of heaven is actually quite simple. You follow in the path of Jesus and he's your guide. It's maybe overly simplified, but he is the way. So as you seek to further the kingdom of heaven, what did he do? Apply it, do it. You're fulfilling the kingdom of heaven, God's world, how God operates. So wait on the gifts that you have. And let the big picture define your smaller goals. So I would have loved to be a pilot. Like, I would have loved it. But is pilot on the menu for me? Not a chance. Because that big goal doesn't fit the bigger goal, meaning my sub-goals won't fit that one. It's not a chance. But I have friends who are my age that went for a pilot life. But on the other hand, what they're getting out of life is not what I want out of life. It's basically glorified trucking, and I don't want to be a trucker. Gone from home, my family's gone. So if you boil it down, it is what it is. There's a delicious tickle of flying a 747, I'm sure, but at what cost? So am I going to do that? Not a chance. Though I would enjoy it, so let the big picture define your smaller goals. So whether your gifting is in music, language, life skills, like a few of the things I mentioned earlier, work ethic, let those things develop to be used of God and be available. And I'd like to touch on something else. I read something a number of years ago, but there was this really, really, really good hockey player in the NHL who was having issues with his team. And he played really well. He made a lot of goals. They won games because of him. But they were feeling as a team there was tension between him and the team. And it would show up once in a while in the news with comments. Once in a while he would do stuff that was just tension in the locker room. And there was a last straw where they said, that's enough. This guy needs to be traded. He's the best guy on the team, but he's gone. You know what it was? I won't have you guess, but his last straw was when he showed up to practice. He showed up at the arena to practice in sweatpants. So NHL players are required to wear suits, or they were, probably still are. There's a dress code. We wear suits, it's like dignified, we show up in suits, we change into our hockey gear, we go out, we shower, back into suits, and then home we go. Whatever you do at home, so be it. But this guy showed up in sweatpants to practice. And the team said, you've done a lot of stuff wrong. You've hurt the team in many ways. But this one, no, you are getting traded. And I think he was benched for a game or two and then shuffled off elsewhere. And he did okay elsewhere. But the team, the coach said, we are a team here. We cannot have an individual sore thumb that's insistent on doing his own thing. But it's interesting that the clothing was the last straw. And you know what? Clothing is a big deal. I'll just touch on that here. So clothing says something about you. Clothing, like if you go into a mall, what they want you to do is basically put the eye flag out. Look at me, look at the style, look at the cut, look at the brand name, look at me. Vacuum, 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 vacuum is what the world tries to do. So if you look at the military and you've got 1,000 people who are in the same suit, it's a very different picture. He's just part of the crew. There's no distinguishing anything versus somebody trying to flaunt himself. Very, very different mindsets. So the mall crowd basically is me, 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 where the biblical principle is modesty, meaning moderate, average, normal, unobtrusive, hidden, moderate, medium. So if you're a line pusher with clothing, you probably have a heart issue that does not like to bow. You still want I, you still want me. So clothing says something about you, and whether you're part of the team, if I can put it this crudely, forgive me, is whether you wear the uniform or not. Now, I hope you know me well enough to translate that into words. I just said it as with a clunk on purpose. But if you're a line pusher, check your heart. It's not healthy to be a line pusher. Not. The heart is usually not in a happy place. And I say that with confidence because I was one. I was the guy, it's embarrassing, but at the 2001 Bible school pictures, people, there are 600 young men dressed very similar with a few rebels that are really off. And I was there in my red. This is the charity days where ladies wore pastel. The men wore tan slacks and long sleeve shirts. So this is the environment. But I was there with my red sweater and light blue, loud blue jeans. And I'm sitting there in that crowd going, it's loud and it's, I wish I hadn't. I tell you, I wish I hadn't. And I know clearly what my heart position was back then. I could not have defined it like I'm doing today, trust me. I just had an inner need that was, I didn't want to be like that. I'm not one of you. But it would have done my single heart super good to be able to say, I'm going to bow. I'm okay with being one of you uncool guys. I'm telling you, it would have been extremely healthy. But I went home, I clunked my head against the brick wall for a year or two, figured out it's not a great idea. Why don't we try God's way? God's way is better. Like, no question. So when I say these things strongly, it's because I've done it. I've done it for years. I know what's there. I'm not talking to anybody here, but I've done it, and I know what it's like. So the line pusher was one, tried it, doesn't work. This way is what God has in mind. Don't be a line pusher. Do this. If you look at the people around you, like whether that's whether you're Hutterite, Amish, evangelical Christian, think of it like if you're a line pusher, do this exercise with me. Look at the average around you, how people dress, and put yourself in their clothes. So that means maybe dumping, I don't want to say things because I don't want to be specific on anyone because I'm not. But take your clothing that you've made the image of, put it aside, and put on the clothing of the average. Are you okay with that, or are you there, or is it like, ooh, I don't want to. That is far too normal, far too base, far too medium for me. Where's your heart at? It's healthy to say, I want to be medium. I don't want to be an I. I want to be part of the group. I want to contribute as a team member. So clothing is actually a really big one because it makes a loud statement of where your heart is probably at. I'll just give it a bit of flexibility there. So look at the average and ask, am I okay in their clothes? The key is modesty, moderate, medium. Okay, so I think I'll wrap up there. Just one more illustration. The other thing, oh man, I'm over time. One more story. So accept your limitation. You're young. That means you've had a limited processing years to view stuff. Two is accept your potential. What God has for people that will give him their heart is almost unbelievable. I look at my life, I've not arrived anywhere, but I've said it many times with sincerity. It is frankly amazing what God can do with a brick. So what God started out with me, and he's able to drag me up, is to me completely astounding, because I'm telling you, I was the rebel, totally. So it's amazing what God can do with a brick. Give him your heart. You're more than bricks, by the way. I was way back. You've had far more training and much more godly input than I had. But the accept your potential. God can do anything with you. But it's in daily life. It's a daily. Do you think Mary expected the angel when she did? When the angel came down and said, Mary, today's the day you are going to bear the Son of God. I'm sure it was a normal day. She probably washed dishes, washed clothes, swept the floor. And she did yesterday and the day before and the day before. But that one day God said, it's time. I need you. Or Abraham and Isaac. He didn't dream that the next day God would wake him up and saying, here's the biggest test, I'll put it in the Bible. Men will look at and marvel at you for the next generations of thousands of years. So one more story. Accept your potential. One more story. And this one is, there is wisdom outside of you. So in the same way that the commander tells the troops what to do, the horse trainer tells the horse what to do, there are cases when a parent or a church authority knows things and sees things deeper and in more layers than you do and longer term than you do. So the story is this. Accept people outside of your viewpoint. If you don't see it, that actually doesn't mean anything. Human beings can frequently be, I still see things, we can be blind. I see things at 44 that I didn't at 43. Totally not. There's brand new concepts that I looked at all this time, all of a sudden a layer comes off and whoop, I see it. So you are young, and sometimes there's things that your authorities may see that you just don't. So I had a friend who's a pilot who flies a WestJet, so he told me a story, and I'm paraphrasing. He was taken off when he was doing, he had a first job, he was delivering mail up north, and he was taken off from Calgary, I think it was, and he was climbing up to X amount of feet. Where's my marker? I am sorry for going over time, but this is, I want a quick finish. So north, east, west, south. So he was heading, let's say north, this way. And he was gaining altitude, and air traffic was directing him where to go. He's climbing 2,000 feet, 3,000 feet. So air traffic says, okay, so-and-so call sign, we need you to bear east at a 270-degree turn. And he was a new pilot. I think he'd been working for a month. This is a big airport. There's a lot happening. And so they said, bear east. So they want him going this way. But they said a 270-degree turn. And it was a lot of traffic, a lot of static, lots of stuff going, gauges climbing, check your angle, check your airspeed. And the 270 was just kind of a bumblebee. He didn't quite process it. But he heard east. And I didn't quite understand it. Are you sure he said that? So he starts edging this way. And as he's going off of his path, air traffic comes back and said, call sign so-and-so and so-and-so. Could you confirm so-and-so? I need to head east at a 270-degree bearing, I think is what he said. And he said, copy that. And he kept going again. He kept edging east. But what they wanted from him, then he said, they called him again and said, okay, we need to be clear here. Like they're starting to not communicate with the other people around them. They're focusing on this guy. And they got serious with him and said, okay, call sign so-and-so, we need you heading east at a 270-degree bearing. And he said, well, am I not doing that? It's not professional language. You're supposed to be this crisp, cool pilot voice. And they said, basically, long and story short, he was supposed to do this. He was supposed to fly this way, turn left 270 degrees, and go east. So not 90, but 270. And he said, we need you back over on your current heading immediately because you're flying into the path of an oncoming 747. Literally. Get out of there. So we did not tell you to do 90 degree east. We said 270 east. Get out of the way. Once he's clear, head east all you want. But get out of there. I did not tell you to do that. Like, move left. There's a whatever X number of plane, 600 passengers coming in. You're in his way. Move it. And he didn't know. And then all of a sudden he's, oh, and he gets that clarity. And 270 East, okay, I get that. And he's back over. So to him it made sense. And he did. And they corrected him. But he wasn't listening. And then shut down the world. This is bad. Move left, I'm telling you. So he got it partially, but he didn't get it. And there might be things in your life, you're younger, your parents are older, be it things that the church decides this is serious. And you're like, I don't see that. Well, frankly, nobody asked you if you saw it or not. There's other people in charge. If they're in charge, it's not your job to decide. Once you're in the place of being a gray-haired man and you get to guide and shepherd safely for the next 100 years the flock under you, and you make a call like that, you want them to just do it because there's stuff you don't get. And we don't care if you don't get it. Just do it and see what happens 50 years later. That's key. There's stuff you don't see. So when a young person says, well, I don't see it that way, that is so, can I say, as I said it before, that is so stinkingly arrogant. Don't do that. If you, with your tender years, if I can say it that way, say, I just don't see that. Ugh. That's like a kindergartner saying to his teacher, and they're trying to explain algebra, and he says, well, I don't see it that way. Well, who be? Who asked you in the kindergarten whether you can understand algebra or not? That doesn't mean it's not true. It just means you're limited. Accept it. So with authority, with being guided, let God guide your life. We sometimes have common sense. God has actual sense. So I'm just going to leave it there. Look at the big picture and look at the heart posture. Be okay to bow. You want harmony with God. Amen. Oh, the title is Resign from the I Team. There's a lot in that title. Amen. (Clears throat)